So I hope this goes well. I'm really excited to talk and preach a little bit on this passage this morning, because when I first looked at it, it just kind of felt so similar in many ways to last week's gospel, right? The abide in me, remaining a part of the vine was last week's, remaining a part of the true vine. And last week I talked briefly, since it was a family service, on this idea of the kind of passive way in which we remain a part of the vine and the passive way in which we abide in God, that we might let what God is already kind of doing in our lives affect us and move us and like knit us in to what God is doing in this world. And it's so interesting, every time that what something initially starts out feeling like a very similar passage ends up being something very unique, very different. And I'm not sure if it was just where I was this week or what was happening, but what weighed heavily on my heart as I was reading and thinking and reflecting on this passage is the question of, not the question of, but the reality of companionship and of loneliness and of the way in which God remains with us and we are invited to abide with God and with one another. That while last week's passage of the vine was very much about kind of remaining, because that is where we get our, that is our source, that is how we remain connected to the things of God, today's passage is very much a call for us in how we interact with one another and how we kind of gather ourselves before God. And it's a powerful thing for me, because I think of all the things that we have to offer this world as followers of Jesus, this is one of the most powerful, right? This idea that we are called and given the strength to be in communion with one another, to be companions with one another, to care for one another, right? I mean, how many places do we have in our society today where you can come and count on a community of people who will by and large be on your side and be there to support you and encourage you and your family, who aren't related to you other than the church? I spread that sentence out. I'm not sure if that made sense. Let me try that again. The reality is that like there's something very powerful for me, that there aren't a lot of places we can go where we know we're going to be cared for by people that don't need to care for us, right? The kids that come into this place, they run into each other, they play with each other, they make new friends, they interact with one another. They're cared for and looked after by other people who aren't related to them. I can't think of anywhere else where I really had that opportunity, other than maybe school. And that was a very different, you know, kind of engagement. That was a different relationship than what is kind of fostered here. And now I understand that depending on what churches you've been a part of or where you are, this is not always the case, right? Church sometimes is something very different than a place of community and a place of gathering, a place of support and encouragement. But I do hope that we are and are continuing to create that kind of church here, that kind of community here, where, yes, we're not all going to be everyone's best friends, right? And that's okay. That's not, I don't think, what community is necessarily. I do hope you'll meet people here that will be friends and companions and support throughout the way, but more so, I want us as the people of God to gather together so that each and every one of us knows that this is a place where we are welcome, where we can come. A place that no matter where you are or how you feel or what's going on in your life, that you know that you're welcome at this table, that you will be offered and able to receive the body and blood of Christ, that good communion that is offered to us to remind us and to instill in us and to create and engender in us that grace of God that is given to us freely by God's love for you and me. You see, I was listening to a report, which I was, I guess, not super surprised of, but at the time was a little shocking. I had not heard of this, but there is UCLA has created this kind of 20-question quiz that they call the loneliness profile. And folks have started using this in different studies and in different ways. There's a recent group that has used this particular quiz or test evaluation and done a very large study of thousands and thousands of Americans kind of all over the country. It might actually have been extended beyond Americans. It might have actually been worldwide as well. I can't remember the details. But they broke everything up into the different age groups, and they looked at kind of where they fell on this as their loneliness quotient. And what that basically meant was how well people do or don't feel connected to one another than people around them, whether that's their friends or their communities and kind of all of the above. And I just, this is actually a question that feel free, you can actually answer. It's not rhetorical. Does anyone want to take a guess at who the loneliest, the folks who scored the highest, which age group scored the highest on the loneliness quotient? Anyone want to take a guess? Yeah. Well, even younger, actually. 18 to 22. I would have thought a number of things before that, but it's true. 18 to 22, which is the youngest group they scored. They didn't test teenagers or, you know, high school students or younger. 18 to 22 were the loneliest group of people in this study. Now, again, it's a sampling. It's not a longitudinal study. They're going to continue to do this research. But there's something that really struck me when I think of what this church has to offer, and that the main kind of folks who the church is missing and is doing a very poor job of communicating our gospel and our mission to are folks who are younger, right? Are the next generations that are coming up. Now, that doesn't seem to be as much be our issue here. We tend to be a very, very young parish. But by and large, as a church, this is very unusual in most of our churches. And I think in that space is where we are called and have the opportunity and are invited to work. I think one of the most powerful things we have to offer is ourselves, as we are. It's why I talk so much about God loving us and us kind of remaining and living out our lives as we are, as God has created us to be, as God is calling us into work and mission in this world. Because it's in our relating to one another. It's in our being available to one another that I think has incredible power, not just for this community, but for this world. This line, this phrase that Jesus uses, you know, no one has greater love than this than to lay down one's life for one's friends, right? I grew up hearing that passage and quoting it, and I had these noble ideas of kind of giving my life in some bizarre, contrived situation, you know, for someone that I cared about, and the nobility inherent within that, right? And in the news, right, when someone does something heroic like that, they are lauded, they are celebrated, and they should be, right? But I think what this passage is about is less and less these rare moments of heroism, and more about the everyday, mundane realities of love. There is something truly heroic about loving someone that everyone else finds really hard to love. And don't worry, there's plenty of those folks in the church. You don't have to go far. I'm probably one of them much of the time. There's something powerful about being available to folks that the rest of the world has rejected or walked away from. If you look historically at the church, some of our greatest successes are the ways in which we have remained or gone into places where no one else wanted to go. I think there's a reason why people celebrate Mother Teresa so much. She went to the untouchables of Calcutta in India, right? She sat with the folks that the rest of the kind of community, the rest of the society had rejected and discarded. She didn't fix them. She didn't heal them. She didn't make them all better and send them home, you know, with everything they needed. She gave them shoes if she could. She sat with them while they died. She cared for them as best she could, along with the other volunteers around her. There was something beautifully human and powerful about that. And it's something that is a part of our story. It's a part of who we are. And I think it's magical and powerful and incredible. And I invite you into that. You see, for a long time, this church, our church, and I don't mean like St. David's or even the Episcopal Church, but just the church at large, the Western Church in the United States. For a long time, we kind of became the mainstream, right? We tend to still be very powerful in like the kind of halls of our political system in the country. We tend to expect things to kind of be done our way. Still, like, there's a bunch of stores that aren't open on Sundays, right? You know, that's us. There's a lot of power in the way in which the church has become a part of society. And that's starting to wane. That's starting to change. And that's causing a lot of kind of growing pains among a lot of my colleagues and a lot of people in the church. But I think it's a really positive, or I think it can be a very positive thing as we learn to kind of recapture some of those things that being the kind of powerful institution has caused us to lose a little bit of. One of my favorite stories of the early church, when we talk about what was it that made the early church grow, right? Why did people decide to start following Jesus, you know, in the kind of ancient world? And one of my favorite stories is the way in which Christians were kind of noted and recorded as caring for people who were sick and dying, which you have to remember, you know, before antibiotics and medicine, modern medicine, spending time with the sick and the dying was a pretty risky thing, right? Because no one knew what caused someone to get sick. They just knew if you stayed around sickness, you were in trouble. And in times where everyone else kind of ran for the hills, have you heard that talk before, right? Back in a long time ago, people would live near water, right? Because you needed to have water to live. So people would live down in the low places where the water was. And when a sickness or a plague came by, the healthy people, the people that could get away and get away from the sickness, would run for the hills, right? And try to wait out whatever it was that was plaguing the town or the village. And everyone left except for a lot of the Christians, a lot of the followers of Jesus. They sat with the dying, they sat with the sick. Some of them got sick and died themselves. Some of them got better. But it was in that compassion, it was in that love, it was in that sitting with one another that the early church grew and grew dramatically. You know, we read those stories in Acts, you know, about, you know, Pentecost and like the, you know, the tongues of fire and everyone speaking, hearing their own language and like these really radical, amazing moments where like thousands of people are added to the church, you know, are baptized all in one day. And those are the stories we remember in our scriptures. But most of the work of the gospel in the last 2,000 years has been the day in and day out simple kind of slog of loving one another. Sometimes in the hardest of places, in the hardest of times, sometimes with the most difficult of people. I think that's what today's gospel is about more than anything else. This abiding in God's love, this abiding with the Father, this idea of knowing who God is because we know Jesus. What that is about is a call to learn how to love more deeply and more fully. And not just to love the people that are easy for us to love, not just to love the people that we've always loved, but to reach out and to care for and to love those around us who might have no one else. We have the opportunity to be the light of Christ in this world. We have the opportunity to receive the gifts of God's love, to know and to be centered and grounded in the reality of what God has done for us that we might live. And that's something that we have to share with one another and with the world. I talk to a lot of people that have long since decided that this place, like organized religion, church, the Christian church, this is not where they want to be. That whatever they're looking for, this place doesn't have it. Part of my work and my life in that world is hoping that my relationships with them can maybe change that perception a little bit. Not that they'll necessarily come to church or be baptized or become Christians, but that they would know and have the opportunity to know that they are not alone, even though they might feel it all the time. That there is someone that is there for them that doesn't have to be there for them, but that wants to be there for them. And the reason I can do that is because I also am supported by a community of believers, a community of people who holds me up. And I hope we can do that for one another. I have found nothing as powerful in this world, and I have met a lot of people who are just dying in this world. And some of those people are people that look like they've got everything going for them, right? They've got a good job, a good family, a nice house. They've got all the stuff that this life pretends to offer, you know? And they're exhausted, and they're suffering, and they're lonely. We aren't always going to have all the money to give to people. We're not always going to have all the ways in which to fix the kind of life situation that people find themselves in. Sometimes all we're going to have is our presence. All we're going to have is ourselves and our time. But I think sometimes that is the most important thing that we have to give. That is the most powerful thing that we have to give. See, God abides with us. God is with us. In the person of Jesus, God has given us everything. And that encourages and supports us. And I have found that out of that, I have the strength to go and care and serve and love in this world. And I hope you are finding and have found that to be true too. I hope that the love that you find in this place, the grace that God offers you, inspires and encourages you and gives you and fills your heart to overflowing. That you also might have that love of God, that peace and that joy and that grace and that mercy to share, not just with one another, but with this world. And as we do that together, I am honored and privileged to be able to do it alongside of you and with you. So thank you for being here, coming out on a gray, dreary, kind of rainy morning to worship with us. It's a beautiful thing, and I know it gives me the strength, and I hope it also gives you the strength to live out your every day, not just here, but everywhere. Amen.